Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 115, being recorded on the 17th of February, 2016, with special guest Matt Usher. My name is Sujit Mello, and on Skype for Business with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest, Matt. Now, before we give the reins to Matt and have him introduce himself, let's bring our listeners up to date with the latest and greatest in the Azure space. And Kale and Evan, thanks for putting all the links in the show notes. I see we've got a fair amount of things that came up recently. I know I put one in there specifically, which I found just recently. So I'll, if you don't mind, I'll start with that. You know, we've been using the Storage Explorer for ever since, I think, Azure first started way back when, and it was run on CodePlex. It was an open source initiative. It's been a great tool, and I didn't realize that they had a new version of Storage Explorer now based on Electron, which is cross-platform, and it's really nice. So I just came across that recently, and that's at storageexplorer.com. I just installed that today, and I think it's a good improvement. They've stopped work on the old CodePlex version of Storage Explorer, so this is the new one that they want everybody moving on to. So just wanted to throw that out there. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Kale, what do you got in the new?
Yeah, I had a couple things. One that's pretty big news today was just came out that the Red Hat Enterprise Linux is now available in the marketplace. So Corey put a blog post out there. We'll drop that out in the show notes. Along with that was the Azure Container Service being in preview as well. So people should check that out. These are kind of big open source initiatives where we partnered with Docker and Mesosphere and certainly Red Hat in that respect. So that's pretty cool news. The other one kind of on the open source side was around Parse. Not sure if people know about this, but Parse was a PaaS type offering that actually Facebook had bought a while back, and that service is shutting down now. And it's a great platform, but they're closing it for whatever reason. And you know, we have a migration guide that we put together to kind of ease that movement of somebody coming from Parse onto the Azure platform.
What is Parse? I've never heard of that before. What exactly is that?
It's essentially a platform that a company had built. It's really cool.
Develop apps on it?
Yeah, think of it as a PaaS type offering. Uh-huh. Where you would just come in, basically provision a website. A lot of it's based on Node.js, but it would provision these websites, and it was a really kind of easy way to kind of get into just setting up a Node app that's running out there in the public cloud. And like I said, they had partnered with Facebook, but great platform. I mean, it has a lot of features, and it's got great support and everything, but just need to we created a migration guide so that we could kind of ease that. It's, you know, there's a data platform behind it, and it relies on Mongo. Yeah. So there's some setup that you have to do there, but we fully support that on Azure as well.
Cool. I gotta say, Kale, you know, because you're still closer to the development side of the world than I am these days, but you know, I came from that space, and my head is just spinning with the number of different things that not only are we enabling on the Azure platform, but we're like embracing them with open arms, right? It's not like we used to be. We're like, hey, great, if it runs on Windows, awesome, but you know, we really want you to go look at this .NET thing. Now it's like, hey, we got Swagger, hey, we got Parse. I mean, it's I don't know how you keep up.
Yeah, it's a challenge, man. It's really hard to keep up now because there's so many services, and just like this stuff, you know, these are kind of out there a little bit, like you said, and then our native stuff continues to progress. So it's interesting. There's not much sleep done.
And what's the stuff about the Raspberry Pi sensor data? Did you add it in
Yeah,
there?
that's a pretty cool thing. So Brady had put that up there. Again, it's basically a way for you to kind of build an app service to record some data from a Raspberry Pi. So it's kind of a walkthrough up there. It's really cool, and just kind of steps you through the whole process of how easy it is to kind of set up a kind of receiver up there in the cloud and have connect it with a Internet of Things device, in this case a Raspberry Pi. And it's pretty sweet how it works, pretty easy. So people should take a look at that if they're interested in those little hardware devices. And the last piece I had up there was around the there was an ebook published around enterprise cloud strategy. It's pretty good. You take a look at it, but basically it covers, you know, some of the things to consider when you're in a large enterprise and, you know, trying to embrace the cloud or take advantage of it in any way, whether you're rehosting, replatforming, all the different capabilities like bursting modes, things we kind of talk about a lot, but it's kind of nice they wrapped it all up in a book here for people to look at that are in that space.
That's nice. That's something I got to send to my customer. I'm sure they'll be interested in that. Evan, you put some links in there?
Yeah, I mean, Kale stole my thunder with the Parse stuff. But, we've got, you know, the Swagger stuff that's coming, which I guess it's in public preview now. And then the...
This is Swagger for the Azure mobile apps. Right,
yeah. And I would be lying if I said I could whip up a demo with this. I mean, I've kind of been doing some reading and contemplating writing some code again, so I've been kind of looking at this stuff, but I will not claim to have a ton of expertise with that. The other thing that caught my attention, and I had to read this one real closely as well, was the SSL pricing changes, and the reason this one caught my attention is because, you know, again, a lot of customers want, you know, to be, you know, all this traffic's going across the internet, so they want to wrap it in SSL, but there's some additional cost, and there's some, you know, hosting changes that you have when you do it. But what we've done is we're now giving free of charge, if you're able to use SNI-based, so server name SSL, then you get that for free. I mean, obviously you have to provide the certificate, but we provide the capability at kind of the base charge for Azure Web Apps. And then... But it, obviously, if you want to do IP-based SSL, right, then you're going to, you know, kick up the charge. But SNI works for a lot of scenarios for a lot of customers. And so now they'll kind of have that as just a base, you know, base capability platform for just when you come in the door, it's there.
And that's a good thing, right, because we want to encourage our customers to be as secure as possible. We don't want this to be a hindrance.
Absolutely.
Putting an SSL certificate in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So the barrier, as I understand it, the barrier to entry for kind of managing and using SSL for SNI-based scenarios is lower, just in general, from a technical side, than trying to do kind of full-on whole server protection. And so this kind of meets halfway in the middle here. You get this low, you know, not quite as much flexibility if you do the full IP-based variant, but enough that it's going to meet most people's needs, you know, at minimum cost. Actually, really, no extra cost, right? We're throwing it in with the basic offering.
Basic offer, yep. It includes the free tier, the basic tier as well, I think, right? I think.
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Cool. That's great. Good stuff. All right, so let's get to our guest, Matt Asher. Matt, would you mind introducing yourself for our listeners?
Sure. Hi, my name is Matt Usher. I'm a senior program manager at Microsoft. Been there about 11 years, currently working in SQL Server.
Okay. And what's new in that space? I know it caught wind of the what's the Stretch database. What do they call these? It's the Elastic database?
There's a bunch of them, yeah. So I specifically work in the Azure SQL Data Warehouse service, as well as the Analytics Platform System Appliance, so scale-out relational data warehouse services.
Okay. And how did you get into that space? You know, you were talking about some of your history and how you may have gotten there. So could you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, actually, I worked in kind of a variety of places all over Microsoft. I spent a little bit of time in developer division working on developer tools, and then went to work in Windows Server for a long number of years working on all kinds of different parts of the server product. And was looking for kind of a new opportunity personally just to work on, you know, big data services and running at cloud scale. And there happened to be an opportunity for a group that was building on-premise appliances So they're scale-out, relational, SQL Server-based data warehousing appliances, multi-nodes running 6 petabytes or so, and it sounded really interesting. So I jumped at the opportunity to kind of work in the SQL Server organization, just working on really big kind of data problems. And then in the last 18 months or so, as Microsoft has built out the Azure SQL Data Warehouse service, then taking that technology and bringing it to the cloud.
How has that service been received so far?
Very well. The Azure SQL Data Warehouse service, it's still in preview as of today, public preview, but the service has been very well received. You think about big data kind of data warehouse problems, and historically one of the biggest detractors from customers getting into big data warehouse appliances or even big data warehouses on-premise has always been cost. And so the data warehouse service just has this capability of, you know, it's right now in preview, it's 70 cents an hour basically at the minimum scale, and it can scale up. And then, and so it gives customers the ability to go in and try these out and do it at kind of a very cost-effective way instead of having a large capital investment of servers and hardware and data center space and all those things. So it's been very well received so far in the marketplace.
Yeah, I have some questions, Matt, about it. I'm familiar with the Azure SQL database and some of the kind of upper limits to that. So we talk about like how large a database can be, but you start mentioning things like petabyte scale. How's that kind of achieved? Because this is kind of a PaaS type offering, right? This isn't like don't have to spend any infrastructure up. They just come in here and basically provision this, and it gets spun up behind the scenes, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a full PaaS service, so just like Azure SQL Database, it's exactly the same thing. You go and you provision one of these things, and you get a connection string to a database, essentially, that can scale. And this is essentially SQL Server under the covers. It's SQL Server running on nodes in a multi-node architecture, MPP-type architecture. So MPP stands for multi-parallel processing. So essentially a scale-out compute problem, and doing this with SQL Server as the backing engine. So the way that this works is what's unique about SQL Data Warehouse is really we've done this kind of separation of compute and storage. And by doing that, we're able to store essentially as much data as you want into the system. Again, you know, petabyte plus scale. So the architecture under the covers is pretty simple. It's SQL Server running with a couple of databases underneath the covers. We call them distributions. And those distributions are stored on Azure Blob Storage as remote storage. And we have the capability of petabyte plus scale, meaning you could take literally a petabyte of data and shove it into this thing, and it looks just like any other SQL Server database. So you can go in and do select star from table, and it's running in this massive amounts of data in a parallel way.
Do you have to provide like your own storage accounts or anything? You mentioned blob storage there.
Nope. It's a managed service. So you can imagine just like you do with the SQL database, you just go in and create a database. And under the covers, we do all the work of setting up all the storage infrastructure and all the management of that. And because it's SQL-based, it gets all kinds of advantages that you would expect from, you know, a traditional really good RDBMS like SQL Server. So things like column store compression. So we use this kind of standard metric of data. So a customer can take, and I'm going to walk you through an example, but customer goes and creates a database. Again, they don't have to do any setup of compute or infrastructure or anything. It's just a PaaS service, so we manage all of that. And then they can take their data and load it into the system, and it uses compression under the covers using column store indexing. And essentially, you can take, say, let's pick a terabyte, so pretty decent size of data. If you had a terabyte of file sitting on disk somewhere, if you insert it into the database in this columnar indexing, not only is the data distributed across multiple nodes for very fast processing, but it's also compressed, so you get the ability of that terabyte. You know, generally, we use about a 5x multiplier, and so that data would sit at about 200 gigs in actual storage that you would be paying for.
Wow, so nice. And is there like – sorry, go ahead, Evan.
I was just going to say, I mean, we keep tossing about these, you know, petabyte and, you know, and terabyte data sizes. We were talking earlier, I started my support career in SQL Server and then kind of transitioned to Azure SQL Database. And so kind of seen that space grow up. I mean, just transferring petabytes worth of data is non-trivial.
That's correct.
You know, I remember when we were first starting this platform up, it was like, oh, well, you know, people are never going to move their big databases because it's just going to take them forever to transfer it. How are you guys tackling that aspect of the problem?
That's a great question. So there's a couple ways. For really, really large data sets, something like a petabyte in size, the fastest way to do it is through a service called Azure Import Export. which is essentially...
I was wondering about that. Yeah, okay, yep.
Disk shipping. So you load the data on disk, you FedEx it, UPS it over to Microsoft, and we'll load it up on the back end faster than you can do it over the network. For customers that are using, you know, smaller scale sets, you know, for customers who have kind of real hard data requirements of pushing data to the cloud, most of the time they'll have connectivity through something like Azure Express Routes, so they can, you know, move their data over dedicated telco circuits. And then for other customers that are have CloudBoard data, so they have other services that are generating data, we have a significant number of customers who are generating IoT data from all kinds of devices, medical equipment, drill heads, I mean, you name it. You can think of it that is emitting this device information. That can be either surfaced through Stream Analytics and directly inserted, or it could be landed in Azure Blob Storage, aggregated, or in something like HD Insight, and be able to be streamed out of it. And that's done in parallel. We have a technology called Polybase, which allows you to essentially read external data via T-SQL code. So you can go in and write select star from table, and that table could be backed by an external source. And because we're this multi-node architecture, we're able to stream in parallel from all of these individual nodes to stream in. So very, very fast processing of ingestion of data.
Wow, that's cool. And just so our audience knows, you don't just copy your data onto these drives and ship them to us. There is encryption and BitLocker. And whatnot involved. So, you know, it is well protected. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There, you know, the joke used to be when I was, you know, in the database world was, hey, sometimes, you know, topping your car with your backup is faster than trying to transfer it over the wire.
Yeah,
right. And this is kind of the same thing. FedEx is faster, or UPS, or however we ship them.
Yeah,
is
when we start talking about petabytes of data, yeah, that's exactly the case. Right now, only, you know, very few companies in the world could transfer petabytes of data over wires, you know, very efficiently. Microsoft obviously is one of those, but.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Now, Matt, though, one thing that always confuses me, you know, we talk about handling big data and large data sets a lot, but there are so many offerings that come into play, right? There's as you mentioned, the HD Insight, then we have the Data Lake Store, the Data Lake Analytics, and of course now we have the SQL Data Warehouse. How does a customer approach this? If they have a use case, how do they decide which solution they should be using over here? Because it seems to be quite a bit that we're offering.
Yeah, that's a great question. Some of it is, really, to be honest, some of it is developer preference. So if you're coming from a relational world, you know, SQL Server, Oracle, one of those kinds of RDBMS type systems, something like SQL Data Warehouse is a natural transition. The language is very similar. The tooling kind of is very similar, those kinds of things. And the second kind of component is really the accessibility to the data. So if you're a customer and you're looking at something like HD Insight as a batch processing component, right? It's essentially built on this concept of unstructured data, and it's really kind of a bottoms-up approach, which means I want to shove all my data into something, but I don't know what questions I want to ask yet. And so I'll formulate those later, similar to kind of the data lake solution, where I'm just going to land all of my data and I'll figure out how to make sense of it later. And SQL Data Warehouse comes at it from a tops-down approach, which is I really understand my business, and I know the questions I want to ask, and so I'm inserting the data that's appropriate to answer those questions. So how many sales did I do this month? You know, kind of doing predictive forward-looking analytics, like every retailer wants to do shopping cart churn analysis. So, you know, I know what people placed in the shopping cart, and, you know, how do I turn that into more sales? You know, maybe those people walked away for some reason, so how do I incent them in a way to make, you know, better sales? Or what happened when my competitor did a 10% discount in this region, and how did that impact my business? So those kind of standard questions that people will want to use really comes in the structured world. Now, some of this goes back to kind of the larger question, which is RDBMSs versus kind of HDFS or the Hadoop world.
It
really is, you know, to be honest, they're blending closer and closer every day. But really, that's kind of the big strategic approach is one's kind of a batch model, which is the HDFS model, where you want to go out and run a batch operation against a bunch of data. And SQL Data Warehouse and the SQL side of the house is more kind of interactive, you know, near real-time querying. So you can get the data and adjust it very quickly and then get insight out of it very quickly, kind of
iteratively. It sounds like there's a lot more upfront planning required when you create a SQL Data Warehouse, then, right, in terms of schema and design.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's traditionally you know, full data warehouse design, but what we're finding is that customers are getting looser and looser with kind of the structures of the way they're setting these things up. Because you have capabilities in SQL Data Warehouse of things like this concept of, we call it CTAS, create table is select. So what a lot of customers do now is they essentially build landing zones inside of the system, or staging zones, and they go land the data just like they would in a data lake, and then they use a CTAS or crate table of select to be able to go just aggregate the data out in a way that makes sense at a later point. So maybe you land all your weblog data in there, but you're not sure how you want to ingest it. So then you start CTASing into permanent tables that are appropriate for things like, you know, a customer churn analysis, or, you know, simple things like blog, you know, what browser customers are using, or what kind of mobile devices are they using, so you can target applications, those kinds of things. So it's a blend of both.
And what kind of tools would a developer use to help them create these schemas or write these CTAS, as you call them?
Yeah, so this is standard T-SQL. So it's the same set of tools you would use with any SQL Server database. So this is truly just scale-out SQL servers. Currently today in preview, we support SSDT as the primary development environment, just like SQL Server does. And we're moving into just having full SSMS support for kind of management operations. You know, those are kind of the two common development tools that everybody uses for SQL databases.
Yeah, I had one question too, Matt, like on, especially around data warehouses, one of the big things that people typically are doing is some sort of ETL operation.
Yep.
And we have a lot of tools there, like, you know, a data factory and things like that. I'm just wondering what you're seeing people are using there to kind of do that ETL process and use this as their ending zone for their warehouse.
Yeah, that's another great question. So, you know, SQL Data Warehouse is a unique product in that data warehousing in general is usually a grab bag. If you think of other kind of solutions, you know, website with a backing store, they're usually pretty, you know, here's my front-end technology, here's my back-end technology, and that's about it. Data warehouses are varied. There's not really a collection of tools that people generally use. So you have all kinds of loading tools, all kinds of analytics tools, all kinds of reporting tools. From an ETL perspective, we have first-party support with Azure Data Factory, obviously, in the cloud. So, you know, any Databorn that Azure Data Factory can has access as a source can then be targeted into SQL Data Warehouse, as well as SQL Data Warehouse being a source for targets of other things. You know, on-premise, we have SQL Server Integration Services, so SSIS and SQL Server. We're a target of that, just like SQL Server is, so we just use the same connectors for that. And then we built out a third-party you know, ecosystem around us. We worked with some of the top vendors in the data warehousing space, so not only Microsoft first-party products, but a lot of third-party products, you know, Informatica, Tunity, Bright Software, some of these other companies that provide these solutions. Because most customers generally have a mix of things, and so for SQL Data Warehouse to be really successful, it's fitting into that ecosystem of customer behavior. So having all the tools that they're expected to have available to them and certified against the product.
That's fantastic.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for that that overview. That was very nice. Great. So now, if people want to get started, what's the best way for them to learn how to use SQL Data Warehouse or get familiar with it?
Actually, the easiest way is just to go read the documentation and start a trial and get started. We have a Microsoft short URL you can go to. It's aka.ms/SQLDW, and it'll take you right to the landing page to get started on the documentation. We have a bunch of kind of hero content that'll tell you, you know, how to get started creating a new database and how to create your first, you know, tables and how to load some sample data and, you know, how to connect it to tools like Power BI. We can walk you through the whole scenario of building a database.
Great. Now, you mentioned the acronym MPP earlier. And, you know, I'm familiar with multiprocessor and parallel processor. I'd never heard of a multi-parallel processor. Can you just spend a few seconds explaining what that is?
Sure. Yeah, we went over that a little quickly. So traditionally, if you think of a SQL Server database, they're traditionally symmetrical processing, or SMP, which is essentially it's a shared system. So you have some shared components. You can think of a server that has, say, a single OS, and you're sharing bus to connect to the disks, those kinds of things. And so you're sharing all of that infrastructure to be able to run the service. In an MPP world, you essentially share nothing. And so you have dedicated nodes that are completely isolated from each other that don't rely on data from other places to be able to satisfy its component of work. The easiest analogy I give is for people to understand this is, imagine we're building a wall. You got a pile of wood in front of you, you got a bunch of nails and a hammer. And so in the SMP world, the easiest way to explain this is, you know, there's the four of us here on the call. So I'll take the first piece of wood, and I'll take the first hammer or the first nail, and I'll hammer it in, and then I'll hand it over to, say, Kale. And Kale, you can get the second nail and using the same hammer, and you hammer it in. And we work our way through it till we build a wall. That's kind of the SMP model. We're sharing that hammer. Now, in the past, things like Moore's Law said, hey, you know, every 18 months we get a bigger hammer, right? So maybe we can do two nails at a time, right? Three nails at a time. And really what happens is you're still sharing something. We're still sharing that hammer. So it still takes us a while to get through the wall. Instead, in the MPP world, what it means is you divide and conquer. So there's a head node or a leader node, depending on the technology. We call it a control node, but it's just a traffic hop. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it says, hey, instead of one hammer and a bunch of nails and a bunch of wood, everybody gets everything. So each person has a dedicated slot of wood, a dedicated slot of hammer, and a bunch of nails. And then the leader node says, hey, everybody pick up a hammer and everybody pick up a nail, and we say go, and everybody hits the nail at the same time, and we're done. Mm. So really it's this ability to do things in parallel and then optimize that for data warehousing technology. So under the covers, from a user's perspective, you don't have to worry about this. This is the beauty of the system. You just go select star from table. Under the covers, we have the ability to scale from a single node to, you know, very large scale multi-nodes, allowing you to increase the power of the service. So if you need just normal operations, you just have a single node running and you run. But if you go, hey, I'm going to do a big end of month aggregation and I want to be able to do that very efficiently, you can just scale the service up. It takes about 60 seconds today. Mm-hmm. And then you run that in parallel. So something that maybe took 10 hours to do with one node maybe takes an hour to do with 10 nodes, for example. So it just runs in parallel and optimizes your latency of queries.
So Matt, that's just
perfect. Thank you.
No, it makes perfect sense. But I think this just the thought just pops into my head that as you guys continue down this path, I could see a world where, I don't know, 2, 3, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, where you don't really know whether or not you're hitting the data warehouse with its, you know, massively scalable or a single SQL Server instance. I just give it my data and I run my query, and the service underneath figures out whether it needs, you know, a single instance or this, you know, massively parallel instance. Is that kind of where you guys are going conceptually, where you want to have, you know, full T-SQL, you know, parity across the different, you know, versions? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, I would say that's probably a likelihood. I mean, you know, we're now in speculation land, so I'm not talking
right.
about
no,
it.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
We're clearly in speculation land. But yeah, I mean, ultimately the cloud is offering a different value proposition than a box always has. And you think about a customer with a single server in a data center, the ability to scale out was never really something they thought about. When we think about SQL Data Warehouse specifically, like, it's really common for customers to have hard kind of data problems, but they're structured in a way. You can imagine a customer is loading data every morning at 5 a.m. and has to do all their aggregations and have those reports ready for the executives to walk in for their day, you know, at 8 a.m. And so what the cloud service does, the SQL Data Warehouse, you can literally just scale the thing up. I mean, it's as literally as going into a portal. You slide the thing to the right, and the system's bigger. It gives you more compute power. And so what we're finding is people are starting to get used to this. Customers are starting to either script that or automate that as part of their job. So you can imagine that data loading scenario. Instead of it taking 3 hours with one node, it'll take 1 hour with three. And so at the beginning of their load, they just go make the service bigger. They run their ETL, and then at the end, they just scale it down because you don't need the power for compute. And so in the cloud service, clearly this is the pattern that we're moving to. I mean, this is SQL Server, so people always say, oh, SQL Server doesn't scale. I mean, we're talking about, you know, on-premise in our appliance business, we can scale to 6 petabytes plus with SQL Server. You know, in the cloud, it's petabyte plus. So, you know, right. SQL Server has these capabilities. It's now being able to compute across that data, which is really becoming the new world. And so, yeah, I truly do believe, you know, at some point, you won't even know. The system will just kind of automatically do this under the covers through machine learning, through predictive analytics, like understanding your queries. Some of that happens now just in the SQL engine itself through cardinality estimation of queries. Mm-hmm. Some of those kinds of technologies, and we have some kind of neat things up our sleeves that are coming in the next couple of weeks to months, kind of around this space. But I truly believe, like, and even today, the SQL Data Warehouse kind of abstracts a lot of that away. You don't have to worry about how many nodes are running this and where's the data live and how's it split. You don't have to worry about that. It's just abstracted from a user, so they can just insert data and query out of it and just get the power that they need kind of on demand.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. I mean, we totally are in speculation world, but man, that's a really neat place to see that we're going. Like, when we actually get there is probably, you know, totally up for debate. But
yeah,
but to see that's kind of where we're going, where we're now. I mean, I remember many a CritSit case, a server down case in support where, you know, somebody's trying to, you know, run this you know, some deadline coming up and this query just won't run fast enough. And, you know, and it all comes down to how do you tune the query best based on the data structure and the environment the customer's in. And what we're really doing with these, you know, scalable cloud solutions is we're basically saying, you know what, don't worry about the hardware. Don't worry about what it takes to make this work. Now, you might pay a little bit more because, you know, if you had a really well-designed query, maybe it runs, you know, like you were saying, it runs with 2 nodes instead of 10. But if you really don't care and you just need your answer and it's not worth investing in all that query tuning, just pay for the 10 nodes for an hour and then spin it back down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a neat future that you see coming down the pipe. I mean,
sure. And you can imagine that, you know, with all of the machine learning capabilities behind, you know, some of these services, there's things that are starting to emerge already. You look at like the index recommendation system that's built in Azure SQL Database, you know, that's based on analyzing your own workload and saying, based on what you do with your system, here's some indexes you should go apply. And, you know, you can see this as like the auto industry, right? They already have self-driving cars. They're just getting the humans used to the self-driving car. So it's very similar, right? People are very like, hey, this is how I would manage and tune my database. And so, you know, you can see the human slowly being kind of pulled out of the equation of like, hey, the machine can do this better than you. It can recommend and understand very quickly on large data sets what is the optimal way to do this. And, you know, those being built into SQL Server, those being built into the cloud services are, you know, already in evidence today in some of the preview stuff we have out.
Yeah, and that's the goal. I mean, let's be honest. While I do know some people, and I'm sure you do too, being in the SQL product group, who dream of nothing more than optimizing queries, you know, that's just kind of what their passion is around. Most of us, that's not why we're in this business. We're in this business to solve a business problem, and the database is just what we need to get our business problem across.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree.
You know, and pulling that kind of, you know, work off of you so you can do higher value work, you know, business value work is definitely the way to go. I mean,
yeah, it's truly, I mean, it's clearly where the industry is going. It's clearly where customers are asking us to provide services for. I mean, you talk to a lot of CFOs today, and you know, they're doing data center retirements and moving their service, you know, their infrastructure to the cloud. And you ask why they're doing that, and they say, you know, I would rather spend my money on those higher level, you know, analytics problems. How do I understand my data better? How do I use that data to go make better business decisions? And I can use that money that I wasn't spending on a data center to maybe market better or enter a segment that I wasn't in before. Instead of, you know, just somebody, you know, making sure that the data center is not being broken into, you know, security, heating, cooling, infrastructure, you know, all that stuff you have to worry about with a data center. And then the technology is also moving up those kind of stacks, right? You don't think about today, you look at your phone and you don't think about, oh, you know, how do I connect to Wi-Fi on this thing? And it's complicated. Like, you just hit a button and it's already configured and it just happens, right? You're on Wi-Fi, and then when you're done, you hit a button and it turns off, or Bluetooth, or any one of the other kind of higher level things that you want to do with it. The database world is moving there. I mean, you can clearly see this in SQL Server 16 and SQL DB and SQL DW, where, you know, that infrastructure problem's gone with these PaaS services, and then you're starting to see the kind of core infrastructure, faster and faster.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a hard time envisioning a world where I never have to work another SQL Server setup case. I just miss that already. No, I'm just kidding. Those are awful cases. But no, this is great work you guys are doing. It's really exciting.
Thanks a lot, Matt. This is awesome. Thank you very much for taking the time to come on. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and if there's any particular links that you want to share with our listeners, send them over to me, and we'll put them in the show notes so they have that as reference.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Appreciated, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
You're welcome. Thanks for hosting me.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.